These were dangerous times. The second quarter of the 16th century had made Elizabeth Tudor and her generation of coming men watchful, insecure, fearful for their lives. Nothing could be taken for granted. Health and happiness were fleeting. Reversals of fortune came with devastating speed. This was the generation raised in the last days of King Henry and come of age in a time of religious and political flux. The religious radicalism of Edward VI's reign had been quickly followed by reactionary extremism and bloodshed in Queen Mary's. During the political tumult of these years, there was no better time for ambitious men to seize position, wealth, and honours. No longer was power the exclusive prerogative of old aristocratic blood. When a Thomas Wolsey, son of a butcher, or a Thomas Cromwell, son of a blacksmith, could rise in Henry's reign to be the mightiest subject in the land, then what bar to ambition during the minority of Edward, the turmoil of Mary, and the unpromising advent of Elizabeth? But vaulting ambition and exorbitant rewards brought their own peril. The natural hierarchy of things mattered to the 16th century mind. Men elevated beyond their due estate, women raised as rulers over men, were unnatural events and boded ill. Those with the greatest aspirations could not expect to die peacefully in their beds. God remained at the centre of this febrile and unpredictable world. His will was discerned in every random act. Death was everywhere. It came as sudden sweating sickness and struck down communities of healthy adults. It came as fire to purify heretic beliefs. It came through poison or the deadly thrust of steel to dispose of inconvenient obstacles in the machinery of power. The supernatural had a physical presence, and spirits and magic were natural companions to everyday life. They were part of the grand cosmic scheme which constituted God's hierarchical universe. Analogy, interconnectedness, fixity were deeply impressive to the Elizabethan mind. Mutability and disorder, a sign of man out of harmony with God's plan. Superstition and religion were ways to make sense of suffering, attempts at warding off the apparently random blows of fate. Yet the insecurity of life itself made the living intense, the wits sharper, the senses more acute. For 16th century men and women, there was a life after death, for the godly, well-mapped and glorious. But life on earth was a precious and precarious thing to be seized and drained to the dregs. At a time of augury and superstition, there was nothing to foretell the events of 1558. No sightings of whales in the channel, no preternaturally high tide, nor monstrous births, nor the mysterious lingering trajectory of a comet across the northern sky. Even Nostradamus, whose prophecies were consulted by those in a fever of uncertainty, appeared unaware of its significance. The year opened without cosmic fanfare. Yet this was to become one of the momentous dates in every British schoolchild's history, wrote, along with the Battle of Hastings of 1066 and the Great Fire of London in 1666. 1558 was one of the markers of a seismic shift in English experience, to be chanted in schoolrooms throughout subsequent centuries.